Great. Well, thanks everyone for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Parizem Takuda, Scott Ponser, who will be joining us shortly, and Sean Bruce, who will be speaking with us this hour. So Sean is Digital Innovation Advisor, Information Technology at Hess Corporation in Houston, as you can see behind him. Scott is Managing Partner at Barone Consulting, and Parizem is Associate Engineer, Packaging Day Shift Supervisor at Cargill. So this panel discussion is an element of IRI's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion community. The DEI provides resources and networking opportunities for members as you promote DE&I in your innovation and R&D practices. The community gives you access to facilitate roundtable discussions on key topics, and we will actually be canceling tomorrow's in honor of Veterans Day, but we will see you in December. We have updates with insights and additional resources and interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. And these always take place on the second Thursday of the month at 12 o'clock Eastern tomorrow, or Eastern. And next month, we will be featuring Johan Wicklund, who's a professor at Syracuse University, and he focuses his research on ADHD and entrepreneurship and the link between the two. Right, so just a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with the team. So first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there will not be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. And once we open the floor to questions, you can type your question into the chat and I'll read it out for you, or you can raise your hand using that function and you can come off of mute and have a face-to-face conversation with our panelists if you'd like. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. So let's go ahead and we're going to put you in the hot seat first, Parizem. So can you tell us where and when you served and what you're doing now? Oh, you're on mute. That's all right.
Sorry about that. So good morning, everybody. My name is Parizem Takuda. I serve at Fulbright from 2018 to 2022 as an automated logistics specialist. And I'm currently with Cargill as a packaging shift supervisor, supervising the day-to-day operation at the packaging plant here in Sydney, Ohio.
Awesome. Thanks, Parizem. And Sean?
Yeah, hi. Hello, everyone. I'm Sean Bruce, and I'm a digital innovation advisor at Hess Corporation. I served in the United States Air Force from 1990 until 2010, when I retired after 20 years. I did 10 years as an enlisted person. I was responsible for F-111 and F-15 avionics systems. And then I spent a short period of time teaching at a leadership school for airmen who are preparing to become non-commissioned officers. And then I was able to complete my bachelor's degree and applied for a commission. So then I was commissioned and I was on the AWACS, which is the E3. It's an airborne warning and surveillance system. Most people, if I tell them that, they don't understand what it is. But if I say it is a big white plane with a big radar dish on top, most people will understand that right away. So that was my plane, and that's was my office, if you will, for the last 10 years of the Air Force.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sean. So let's stick with you, Sean. And can you tell us what prompted you to move from the military and into the civilian workforce?
Yeah, you know, the military is a fantastic experience. You get to see the world. You get to do a lot of things, meet with a lot of different people, experience a lot of different cultures. And while that's exciting, it also has its challenges if you're trying to raise a family. And, you know, long deployments, a lot of time away from home can be challenging. And my children were old enough, they were approaching high school age, and I did a lot of reflection. I thought, you know, I'd rather be at home and be there for them as much as I can and less on the road. So that was one of the big initiatives for me, what prompted me to go ahead and transition. And I was, you know, approaching my 20 years, so the timing was pretty good. Definitely could have kept going in the military. A lot of opportunity there. There really is, but it was just better for my family life.
Definitely, that makes sense. And Parizem, how about you?
For me, it was more so to put to use my degree. So I was able to get a mechanical engineering degree. And so I really wanted to use that and also have the possibility to go back to school if I wanted to. So that was the main reason for me to leave the military.
Okay, awesome. That's great. And I think, was it University of Dayton you were at?
Yes, I did. Yes.
So you made it back to Ohio.
I did. It kind of made it easy for me to come back here. So
yeah. Definitely, where you have those ties. Awesome. So let's stick with you, Parizam. And could you tell us what are some of the barriers that impede, you know, a smooth transition from military to civilian employment? You know, what were some of the challenges you faced?
For me, it's really not having a clear vision of what or what job you wanted to have when you get out. I mean, in the Army, you have a career map, you know, what exactly to do, when to do it in order for you to move forward. I mean, you have jobs laid out perfectly for you. And so in the civilian world, you have to have a clear vision for yourself. You have to decide for yourself and really narrow it down to what you wanted to have. So I knew that I wanted to go back into engineering, but what exactly, not having that experience, it was kind of challenging to me. And also not starting the transition early enough. You know, they always say the first day you join, it's the first day you start planning your transition. It's so having the time to actually starting transitioning and making sure that you have all the resources, utilize all the resources that the Army put out there for you was one of the main issue. And also, I would say being able to translate the skills that I've acquired, that I've learned in the Army in order to make myself marketable out there for the civilian world, being able to help them understand what I bring to the table was one of the main challenging things for me, I'll say.
Oh, I'm sure. And you participated in the Heroes Make America program,
yes,
right?
Yes. So that's where it comes for using all the resources that are out there and also starting early. So I was lucky enough to have starting my transition process 6 months before my ETS date. And so I had the chance to participate in the Heroes Make America mechatronics program at Fort Campbell, which also helped me actually find this position with Cargill. So through that program, we had a lot of sponsor, a lot of company come through workshops, you know, kind of talking to us about what the jobs are and mentoring us. And so, you know, that was really helpful and made my transition easy. So, yeah. So when you do have the chance to start ahead, you have better chance to know all the resources out there for you and utilizing them. So.
And did they help you with that kind of translation of the skills too?
So we did have a lot of resume workshops. We did have a lot of LinkedIn workshops. So, you know, like just having the people or other veterans actually that are within those company and sharing their transition experience with us, you know, what challenges they had and what or how to better translate those skills or what those company are actually looking for. And because sometimes we do sell ourselves short, you know, it's easy to think that things that we learn, it's because it's everyday thing, but those company out there in the civilian world are looking for those skills. And so being able to really translate them to what they're looking for and being specific. So they've been really helpful with that through resume workshop, LinkedIn classes, and just having those panels, just like we're doing today. So we had the chance to go through those as well through that program. So.
Oh, that's awesome. So glad to hear it. And so Sean, how did you make the leap?
Yeah, you know, the barriers that Parizam just mentioned are everyone transitioning from the military into civilian world struggles with the same thing. And I'm so glad there's programs like the one she participated in to really help that. They recognize that that is an issue. And so they really work to help bridge that gap, translate those skills into marketable skills in the civilian workforce. I think that's very, very helpful. The military has typically tried to do that through what they call the Transition Assistance Program, which is still part of you do that while you're on active duty. And it's just kind of a 1 or 2 week seminar that they try to help you prepare. But I went through that, but I'm sure it didn't get to the level of detail and help that the organization that Parazam was a part of. I would say for me, you know, I had done a full 20-year career, and a lot of those organizations are really geared towards maybe company grade officers or junior enlisted who were in for 4 or 5 years. And it's harder to do for somebody who has been a career military person, because as you probably have less transferable, you think you have less transferable skills because you've really specialized for so long. But I'll tell you, one thing that helped me is I completed my bachelor's degree. I went back to school to work on my MBA while I was still active duty. So I completed that. And I really appreciated that opportunity because it really forced me to interact with, you know, peers who are in the civilian workforce. So I got that perspective as I was going through my business school. So that helped. And that helped me speak the language in corporate America a little bit better, I think. And I was also very active in my community, just volunteering, making sure that I just wasn't around military people all day, all the time, because that's really easy to do, by the way. So I really got involved with community activities, had a lot of friends and people through those organizations that were civilian, and allowed me to kind of make sure I'm practicing that language as well. So because they are different languages in a lot of respects. And then when I transitioned, I will tell you some of the barriers just from that transition is getting used to, what do I wear to work? Yeah. you know, it's so easy when I was in uniform. I just throw on my BDUs or my flight suit. It was the same thing every day. I didn't have to think about it. So now you have to think about a whole new wardrobe and like, am I doing this okay? I had a good friend who was, he was in the Air Force for 33 years, just retired, full bird colonel. And he was like, I don't know what to wear to work. And I said, go to Joseph A. Bank, tell him you got a new job. Just tell him you need enough clothes for a week to mix and match. And you'll be good. And then the other thing from an organizational perspective, in the military, you're very used to a hierarchy. It's very hierarchy driven, right? And you know exactly who you report to and who they report. You know the chain of command cold, all the way up to and including the president of the United States. In the civilian world, it's kind of a little bit, you're on a first name basis in a lot of respects, and that was hard to get used to. Like, this is my supervisor, and I'm not calling them by a title. I'm calling them, like, my supervisor is Alyssa. Like, 10 years ago, I wouldn't even dreamed calling my supervisor by their first name at all. And so that's something that I had to kind of get past, that mental block, if you will, and yeah, tell myself that's okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of flipping the coin a little bit, we talked about the barriers. So what are the key skills that you think you developed in the military? And, you know, they don't necessarily have to apply to the workforce, but, you know, that too, but, you know, in your life. So Parazam, can you share some of those?
Yeah. For me, I will just say just teamwork, the ability to work as a team to accomplish one goal, and also being able to lead that team if I'm asked to. You know, it's something that in the Army, everybody is trained to be a leader. I mean, you have to be a leader. Being an NCO or being a commissioned officer, you have to lead a team. It doesn't matter how many people. And so just that ability to switch, be a leader and also be a follower when I need to, depending on the role that I'm in. And also just adaptability, just being able to adapt to different situation, just being able to find ways to get the job done when things don't go as planned. You know, we don't always think about it, but just figure out things and just being able to have the ability to have different tough conversations sometimes, being able to perform under pressure, just conflict resolution. And as a supervisor right now, are all things that I have to do that might come easy to me just because of being in the Army and always working close with people, working in teams, and being an NCO, having to do monthly review with your soldiers. So it's things that comes easy to me just being in the Army. So
yeah, and I mean, you know, you're an early career professional. That mm-hmm. sort of leadership skills, you don't come across that very often. So that must be a huge benefit for you.
Definitely. So,
how about you, Sean?
Yeah, Parazem nailed it, right? All those things are skills that you learn universally across all branches of the service at a very early point in your career. You are put in leadership roles out of necessity. And I think in the civilian workforce, they're often very surprised about the amount of leadership that is given to very junior people. At 18, 19 years old, they're leading people and things out of necessity. And you don't see that much in corporate America. And so bringing that skill set is really important. I would say other skill sets that I brought, ability to be organized. I find that helps me all the time. I'm doing some ERG work here at Hess this week in recognition of Veterans Day. And we do some things in our dining room, some displays and some special meals and that sort of thing. And I've had the staff come up to me multiple times saying, "Sean, we really enjoy working with you. You're so organized. You have a plan. You know exactly what needs to happen and when." And you communicate that. He goes, "I wish the other ERGs would do the same." I'm like, "It's just the way you do business. Like, that's what I was taught. You know, I think I maybe take it for granted." And then I think the other part of that is attention to detail. From the minute you get off the bus going into basic training, you got all these inspections. Your clothes have to be folded in squares, has to be grounded. It has to be just right. Hospital corners on your bed, all those things. And you're like, "Why are we doing this? This is just not, what's the point?" And then you realize they're teaching you to have attention to detail. And that really pays off when you're in life and death situations in the military, when you encounter those. But it's important in corporate America too. And it's a capability that you're able to look at things through another lens of being detailed and kind of pick it apart to the point where you're looking for the problems and processes and that sort of thing. You can identify those. And then last thing I would share is project management. Junior officers get tapped on the shoulder all the time to lead little projects here for the commander, another project here for the commander, that sort of thing. And that really helps you build some project management skills and understand this has to happen and this happened. And then it comes naturally when you come out of the military. It's like, "Oh, that project management professional, that's a great certification for and very complement skills that you developed in the military." At least that was my experience. So, yeah.
Awesome. So we'll stick with you, Sean. So what are some of the differences that you've experienced between serving in the military and being in your civilian role?
Yeah, I think I shared one of them earlier, and that was like just titles or the lack thereof, that sort of thing. But I get asked a lot, and I would say one of the biggest thing is esprit de corps, what we call esprit de corps, and a sense of family. In the military, you're part of a team. Like in my role now, I'm very much in the individual contributor role, and it's actually very, very difficult for me a lot of times because I'm used to being part of an integrated team. Now, don't get me wrong, I have a team, but they have their own things they're doing as well. Everybody's doing multiple things, but in the military, you have a team. You know exactly who your team is. You know exactly what you're doing. Very clear on the mission and the vision. You train together. You deploy together. You fight together. You sleep in the same tents. All these things. You ride in the same cars, the same buses, everything from the time you know, all the time. And so you build this sense of camaraderie and esprit de corps. And you know this person next to you is relying on you and vice versa. And you're very reliant on each other. And then you get to know the people very, very well because you're in close quarters with them all the time. And you get to learn their families, too, and what's important to them and what motivates them. And you look for ways, like when some of my troops would deploy and I would have to stay at home base, I would say, what can I do to help you while you're gone so you can focus on the mission? They have families back at home, and maybe the lawn needs to be mowed, or maybe the oil needs to be changed in their car. These are things that we do, and it's just natural for us to do in the military, and it just doesn't happen. So that's some of the things I've struggled with in terms of that transition and not having that same sort of thing. So.
And what impact do you think that has, you know, I'm trying to phrase the question diplomatically, you know, so the teams aren't as close in your civilian role, you know, you aren't able to work together seamlessly, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when you have that, you're more motivated to do a good job for the person next to you. And so I think maybe we're motivated differently in corporate America. Maybe it's, you know, how am I going to be bonused, or, you know, it's a compensation base or that sort of thing. And it's less about how do I really pull through for the other person on my team? So I would like to, I try to get to know my the people here at Hess better in that way. And I think maybe sometimes it's uncomfortable. Like, why is he asking me these sort of questions? Like, oh, I just want to learn more about you. And I use it as an opportunity to actually coach them and say, hey, look, I'll put on my leadership school hat that I was a leadership school instructor when I was in the Air Force. MVPs. And like, MVPs, yeah. Everybody is motivated by they have different motives, different values, and different personalities. And you all bring those to the table. And that changes that shapes who you are as an individual. And individuals shape the team. And so we need to understand how these individuals coming, we need and learn about each other and understand the MVPs of individuals so we can work together better together as a team. So I try to bring that in, and I think it helps the teams that I do work with. And it's a little bit uncomfortable because they're like, some people aren't used to talking about their families or that sort of thing. But, you know, I try not to be too personal, but I like to learn.
That sounds like a very interesting transferable leadership skill too. Parazam, how about you? What are the differences that you've seen at Cargill?
I think it's pretty similar to what Sean just said. I think the culture, right? In the Army, we all work to accomplish the same goal. It's the mission first. So you know that no matter what your MOS, your job is, everything goes towards that same goal. And so in the civilian world, it's a different mentality. It kind of sounds like it's every man for themselves. You know, it's like it's you do just for yourself. And so it was first hard for me to kind of also have that freedom to choose what you want to work on. It's like, in the military, you know exactly what you have to do. Sure, you do have some freedom on how you do it, but you know you're doing it for this same goal. But in the civilian world, you have a say on the projects that you work on the shift you work on. And so that's also hard to wrap my mind on, the amount of freedom that you have in the civilian world and just being okay with it. And also realizing that everybody doesn't have the common experience, right? In the military, just, you know exactly what a person has been through just by the ranks or their MOSs or where they've been, what base they were at. And so it's easy to connect with those people, but here you have people with different background. And so just being able to know that your experience might be different from everybody else and that you all don't necessarily work towards that common goal. And just in the military, you don't always have to force people to work together as a team. It just come naturally. And so here it's like you got to create that culture to have people to really buy in and take ownership of whatever you are working on. And so I think that's the main difference for me. So.
Yeah, that must have been a shock.
Yeah.
To have all these leadership skills and have it kind of be in a slightly different context too.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
All right. So back to you, Sean, and we're going to focus just on the innovation piece because, you know, we're working with innovation and R&D management folks. So what do you think your experience in the service brought to, you know, your innovation role? Because it's a very unique role, even in the civilian role, in the civilian world, let alone having to make that transition. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So Parizan mentioned earlier about being mission focused and finding ways to get things done. And yes, that, I mean, I will endorse that statement completely because in the military, we talk about having a can-do attitude. So it's not I can't do something. It's like something needs to be done and I can do that. I don't know exactly. Sometimes I have to be innovative in about the way I go about getting things done. And it's I'm reminded of the comment that necessity breeds invention, right? And I'll just share maybe a story with you, maybe an example. So we're in Afghanistan. We're flying missions over Afghanistan. And we need to be able to communicate better. And we have communications capabilities. We have UHF radios. We have satellite radios. We have all these different radios and ways of communicating. But as we were flying these missions, we realized that with voice communications, things get broken every once in a while. And so it doesn't always come through. If you ask somebody from the military, how do you hear me? They'll say loud and clear, or they'll say 5x5. And that means something to us, right? Or they'll say you come through broken, which means, hey, your speech is broken. I'm only catching parts of what you say. So we don't have room for broken communications when you're flying missions over Afghanistan. You're trying to coordinate, you know, where different airborne assets are going, who they're providing close air support to, so on and so forth. So we had to come up with a better way of communicating clearly to make sure it's clear, concise, and there's no room for misunderstanding or confusion. So MercChat was a capability that many of you guys may have used MercChat back in the day before, you know, we were the internet was like what it is today, where you message people. It's kind of like a messaging capability. But the nice thing about MercChat is it has very small packet sizes. And so you can send a lot of information, a lot of text pretty quick. So we didn't have that capability on the jet, but on the ground stations, they all had the ability to communicate over internet and do MercChat. Well, we needed to participate in that because we're over Afghanistan. We're trying to coordinate activities in real time. So we're like, hey, we have this old sextant port on the aircraft that they used to use to navigate by the stars. Didn't use that capability anymore, but like the navigator could stick a thing up through there and use it for navigation. We're like, what if we stuck an antenna up through there? And it was a satellite antenna and we could communicate with an Iridium satellite and we could network that into a laptop on the on our desktop. Excuse me, on the jet, and we can participate in these Merc chat rooms. Totally worked, and it was we're able to communicate with in multiple channels with people on the ground, different places, and it was clear we didn't have to worry about broken communications or trying to find airtime over busy communications channels that are already busy. So I think that's one reason that that's just an example of being in the military, can-do attitude, you figure out ways of getting things done because life and death is at stake, and we're not exaggerating that, so you figure out ways to do it, and then it breeds invention, and it forces you to think outside of the box, which I think is very, very helpful in an innovation role.
Yeah, I guess that's something that people wouldn't normally associate with military roles, that ability to think outside the box and have those innovative ideas. That's awesome. So, Parizem, you've got a different perspective, too, because you're an early career professional. Yeah. So can you talk about, you know, the challenges that you faced, you know, coming out and the experiences that you've had, you know, coming out of the military and, you know, having the degree already, but being, you know, kind of out of sync with recent graduates?
Yeah. So, like I said, I was lucky enough to have been through the Heroes Make America program, where they really help in the job search process. And in the fact that all the company that we've had come through the program are veteran friendly. And so what that means is they actually take the extra step, you know, helping you through that program and also kind of mentor you or couple you with a mentor once you start. So I was lucky that my supervisor here at Cargill was a veteran. And so with that, they were also flexible with all medical or any veteran activity that I had to do, right? So that took away that little burden as an early professional. Just, I didn't have to explain to my supervisor, hey, I do need time for my medical stuff. And also just helping me or bringing me along and just making sure I was okay, because he understood what I was going through, because he has been through the same experience, and just reassuring me that I was doing the right thing. I was doing good, because sometimes, again, it's hard to know that you're doing good, or it's hard to really know what the next step is when you don't have that guidance. And I came in with Cargill as an associate engineer, right? And so for the first few months, that was my position. But really having that mentor or that supervisor who has been a veteran was helpful in terms that we had like daily meetings or weekly meetings, just really focusing what I really wanted to do and what other jobs that matches what I really want to do. Because it's like, yes, associate engineer, it can be broad. And so just having somebody in my corner who really wanted to help me, who really wanted to make sure that I choose what is best for me. And so that's where I went from associate engineer to production supervisor. And so, you know, just having that help was easy, for made my transition easy and my early career easy, you know. So I think just making sure that you take advantage of those resources out there, but also making sure that you research the company that you are applying for and making sure they are really veteran friendly. And when they do say that, they actually means that they take the time to really help all the veterans out there. And luckily, Cargill is one of those companies, so it made my transition and my beginning easier. So.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so good to hear. Sounds like you got a great mentor.
Yeah, I do.
So, you also mentioned, you know, in our prep for this call, kind of the disconnect that you had between people who were recent graduates And you, because you had that military experience in, you know, in between starting in your civilian role. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yes. It's easier because, I mean, I graduated and then I didn't have the opportunity to use my degree and I joined the force. And so coming out, you don't have that experience, that civilian experience or experience in the workforce, just as somebody who recently graduated. They have had all the chances to stay updated with all the new, if I would say the new technology or whatever is new within your field. And so for me, coming out of the military, you have to catch up. You have to being able to learn and just taking steps to get yourself updated to what's going on in the industry, but also knowing that, yes, they might bring that new novelty to the job, but you bring more and just being more, or you bring something different, right? Something different to the table and just being willing to learn. I think that's one thing that I had to just push for learning, push for new ways of doing things, and just knowing that you bring something else also to the table, and don't always compare yourself to all the other new people that are in the job force. Just making sure that you know what your place is, what you bring to the table, and ways to improve yourself. So
that's great. And Heroes Make America help you make that transition, right? And recognize those skills.
Yes. Yes. So I want to give a shout out to Jen. I know she's on the call. So
that's great. I'm so glad to hear it. So, you know, one last question before we open the floor to the live audience here. So, you know, Sean, what are some small surprising things that people should know about veterans in the civilian workforce?
I may have mentioned one earlier, and that was, you know, veterans have to kind of reprogram themselves to be able to use first names, as opposed to they are used to hierarchy. They're used to kind of the formality of that. So that's a reprogramming for us. But I think one of the takeaways, and maybe it's not really a small thing, but it's like veterans like to be mission focused. And so if you tell them what we need to do, give us a timeline, we're going to figure out a way to hopefully get it done. And that may rub people wrong, because like sometimes we're just like, if we see roadblocks, we're just like, oh, let's go. We'll just plow right through it. And, you know, you have to be a little more sensitive, I think, sometimes. And so so I think that would be important for other people to know about us. It's our tendency, because the way we're wired. But it's also important for the veteran to understand, like, be aware, like you can ruffle feathers. So try to be cognizant of that and try to maybe take a more diplomatic approach when it's possible, that sort of thing. So, I think I had one example with that, and that was I was in a job where I was actually a contractor working on a project, and I was just blowing through some project, and I had a civilian counterpart that was doing the same thing. And she heard me talking on the phone with one of my clients, and she said, "What are you?" After the call, you know how you just feel like somebody's like staring at you? Well, she was definitely staring at me. And I said, "Hey, what's wrong, Kim?" And she's like, "Why did you do that?" And I'm like, "Do what?" I'm like, I didn't even know what she was talking about. She's like, "Why did you tell them you were going to do something? That's not even your job. Like, don't, you know?" I'm like, "Well, it needs to be done, and I'm capable of doing it. I realize it's not my job, but I'm capable, and I want to keep the project moving." She's like, "You don't do that, because if you do that, they expect me to do it." I was like, "Oh, man." So I was like, different, totally different perspective, and so it really kind of opened my eyes to some things.
That's awesome. Thanks, Sean. Parazam, how about you? What are some things we should know about?
I think it's important to know that, or one thing that people always find surprising is how reliable veterans are, or when they say they're going to get something done, they actually mean it and they will produce the results. or just being disciplined. I think it's just the discipline or being on time. You know, it's like you'll be surprised how many meetings get canceled because people forgot they actually scheduled the meeting, or somebody will say, I'll get this done, but forget about it. But then it's just, I think it's just nice on knowing that they are reliable, and when they say they're going to get something done, they will follow through. So, yeah.
That's a great point. And it just tells me that we civilian workforce, we need to get our acts together is what I'm hearing here. All right. So does anyone have any questions for our veterans here? And you can type it into the chat or you can jump in. Oh, Martha, right there, ready to go. All right, you're on mute, Martha.
So first of all, this has been fantastic. So Parism and Sean, really appreciate your time today. This has been great. My name is Martha Gardner. I'm the Technical Capability Development for GE Aerospace Engineering. And so certainly as a company, we have a number of veterans. I mean, we have commercial and military products, of course, and it's a very active veterans network and all of this. But I must admit that I'm not sure that I've heard of this Heroes Make America program. So, and it just may be a nature of what I've been doing, but I would like to hear more about that and your experience with that and just where I can go get more information. Like I said, I assume a lot of other people in GE know about it. It's just me, but I'm very interested in this.
I'm so sorry, because I'm going to put one of my colleagues on the spot, and she did not expect to have to do this. But Jennifer, would you mind jumping in and giving us just a very brief overview?
I would be happy to. I'm so glad you asked, Martha, and I'm sorry I'm going to stay off camera here, but Heroes Make America is our military and veterans initiative through the Manufacturing Institute, which is the workforce development and education partner to the National Association of Manufacturers. Essentially, we have several things that we do relative to the military and veteran community, but what Parizam participated in is our training program that's available to transitioning service members, active duty military spouses, and honorably discharged veterans, where we provide training in mechatronics, certified production technician, and we have a certified logistics technician pathway now as well, where they do some things through whoever our local education partner is. We also have a 100% virtual training program now as well, so people can participate from anywhere, even overseas. But not only do they get those relevant industry skills, they get credentials also. And then as Parizam mentioned, we do a lot of different events to connect them with companies in the manufacturing industry so that they get to learn more about a variety of different companies, different positions, and really start to feel where they may fit, because that's such an important piece. Is not just, you know, necessarily taking the first position, but finding the one where they're going to be successful and provide longevity to the company as well. So it's really a win-win there. So that's kind of a very high level overview. Renee Hollis is one of our team members on the Heroes Make America team as well. So we would be happy to get you more information about that if you'd like to learn more.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I mean, and it sounded like Parizam, you had a great experience with this program, and that it's gotten you in something that's very lined up with the work that you're doing right now. So I just think that this is awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. And thanks so much, Jennifer, for jumping in. And I will be sure to provide a link to when I send out the recording for all of you too. So you'll be able to explore the website and learn a bit more that way too. Any other questions? All right. Well, I'm going to call this a wrap. I want to say a huge thank you. Oh, Martha's jumping back in.
No, sorry. I just wanted to say, and thank you for your service. Really, it means so much to all of us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Martha took the words right out of my mouth. I wanted to thank you both for your service. So you get double thanks from us. And thank you for joining me here today for this interview. And thanks to all of you who joined live, and thanks to those who are listening later. And we really appreciate you both taking the time to share your experiences and to help educate all of us so that we can better work with the veterans in our offices, in our workspaces. So thank you both so much. And thanks to everyone who joined today, and happy Veterans Day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye. Thanks.